And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular analysis of state government and politics. I'm Ari Snyder, and today I'm joined by Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. Our colleague Steve Missler is off this week, but Bangor Daily News politics editor Mike Shepard has agreed to share his insights on what's been a pretty eventful month. So to start, it's been a week since we finally learned who will be on the ballot this fall for governor. So Kevin, let's start there. Has the political dust settled since those ranked choice runoffs? And if so, how are you seeing this race shape up?
Yeah, so it's interesting. On the Democratic side, the Democratic leadership and the other candidates really coalesced very quickly behind Hannah Pingree. That race, I would say, was a little bit more collegial to begin with than the Republican race. But it did get somewhat heated and feisty there at the end, especially as Hannah Pingree, Troy Jackson, and Shannon Bellows all kind of teamed up to go after Nirav Shah. On the Republican side, it was a little bit different of a scenario. That was a much more kind of bare-knuckle fight between the candidates. And the other candidates on the ballot did not coalesce nearly as much around Bobby Charles, at least not initially. We'll see kind of what happens as this goes forward. Certainly the party leadership and a lot of the legislative leaders have kind of gotten behind Bobby Charles. And now looking ahead to November, you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup. Bobby Charles ran a very dark campaign, I'd say. He talked a lot about problems in Maine, corruption, crime, you know, needles in parks, things like that, problems with immigration. Hannah Pingree, she's been part of the Mills administration for a number of years, so she's kind of part of that establishment. She says she's going to run a much more positive campaign. So we'll see how things shake out.
And Mike, you've got a really interesting story out today about how close the ranked choice runoffs were and how if even just a few hundred voters had ranked candidates differently, we would have different nominees. Tell us more about what you found in your analysis.
Yeah, thanks, Ari. What struck me most is just how razor thin these margins were beneath the surface. We know that the first rounds of both the Democratic primaries were really close, but then you saw Pingree win the governor's race by nearly 25,000 votes in that final round. So that sounds like a landslide, right? But we got to look at all the ranked choice ballots for the first time this week. They were all posted on the Secretary of State's website in a series of Excel files. And it ended up being that the whole trajectory of that race hinged on just 274 voters. Basically, if that many more of Angus King III's first round supporters had ranked Shannon Bellows next instead of Troy Jackson, she would have leapfrogged Jackson, then eliminated Pingree and beaten Nirav Shah in the end. So she could have fairly easily won instead for historical record. You know, she's in fourth place. And it was similar in the second district. Matt Dunlap won comfortably, but it was 3 points, I think, by the end. If just 163 of his supporters had ranked Jordan Wood higher, then Jordan Wood would have made the final round. Then Joe Baldacci likely wins. So it ended up being just a very tight race there between who was it, who was getting out of some of these early rounds and finally vaulting up into the top.
And of course, we have to mention that voters will have a third choice for governor again this year. Independent Rick Bennett has qualified for the ballot and has been campaigning around the state. Kevin, is Bennett a serious contender this year?
Well, I think he has to be taken seriously, and it seems like the parties certainly are taking him seriously. He's been around politics for decades now. He is a former Republican. He was actually the chairman of the Maine Republican Party during Trump's first term. He withdrew from the party and is now running as an independent, and I'd say he's definitely a more moderate candidate than Bobby Charles. So the Democrats are saying, no, he's a Republican. The Republicans are saying, no, he's a Democrat. So it's almost like he's managed to thread that middle ground already as an independent. I think that in this particular year, the momentum seems to be on the Democratic side. We saw that in the turnout during the primaries. The question is, will Bobby Charles' kind of more dark doom and gloom message about Maine, is that going to resonate with the independents who are roughly a third of voters? Or will Rick Bennett be able to tap into those and pick up some Democrats? So I think there's certainly the possibility that he's going to be a game changer here. But again, we don't have ranked choice voting for the governor in the general election. It's easy to forget that because we just came out of a ranked choice primary for the governor. So whoever wins only needs to pick up that plurality. And we've seen over and over again with Governor LePage, with Governor Baldacci, that it's possible to win in Maine without winning a majority.
And Kevin, a lot of people are describing this as an anti-establishment election, especially on the Democratic side. Did we see that play out at all in the primaries here in Maine?
Yeah, we did in some respects. So certainly in the Senate race with Graham Plattner, I mean, Graham Plattner got historic numbers of votes. He wasn't really facing any strong opponents anymore because Governor Mills had withdrawn from the race. And his anti-establishment messaging clearly is resonating with voters. In the second district race, we've also saw Matt Dunlap. He ran on a pretty anti-establishment campaign. The National Democrats had been backing Joe Baldacci. And on the Republican side, almost none of the candidates, I'd say, were establishment Republicans, except maybe Garrett Mason. He spent quite a bit of money on his campaign, didn't do as well. So I guess that could also be an anti-establishment vote.
So, Kevin, you mentioned the 2nd Congressional District seat. Let's stay there for a second. Matt Dunlap won the Democratic primary and will now face former Republican Governor Paul LePage in November. Mike, what is your take on this matchup between LePage and Dunlap?
Yeah, just to start, this is a Republican district, I think, at this point, that has been won 3 times by President Trump. Jared Golden hung on to it several times by winning over a decisive amount of Trump voters. We think that was roughly 1 in 10 in recent elections. So, without Golden, I think LePage enters as a reasonably clear favorite. National Democrats certainly thought Joe Baldacci was their best matchup for him. Dunlap ran to his left. But I will warn that we also have kind of a clashing midterm effect right now, with Trump and Republicans looking pretty widely unpopular. So today I'd bet on LePage if I were a betting man. But he only beat Mills by a little bit in the second district in 2022. And if Dunlap wins, I think it's largely environmental. And we'd be waking up after Election Day to a pretty horrible outcome for Republicans nationally. So I'd put the race in LePage's column for the moment, but everything can change.
It seems like this race, you know, is frequently on the national radar. It is again this year because historically it's been a swing district. Kevin, do you think that's still the case this year? Is it still competitive?
Yeah, I think it is. But for many of the same reasons that Mike just mentioned, it will be interesting to see how things play out through the fall. Right now, the Democrats are saying, yes, this is still a high priority for them. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is the campaign arm of the National Democrats, as well as the Democratic National Committee, they're saying they support Matt Dunlap. But the DCCC backed Joe Baldacci during the primary, and it took them a couple days to even come out and mention Matt Dunlap by name after the primary results. So the question is, how invested are they going to be in this race? They have quite deep pockets. They also help with campaign support in some ways. So they say that they're invested, but they haven't added him to this key group that they call Red to Blue, which are their official top priority campaigns. And we'll have to see how that works out.
Yeah, just to add to that, I agree with Kevin. I mean, I've covered every one of these congressional district races since 2012, and this has been a pretty constant competitive seat in the country during Golden's tenure and even before. I'd say it's usually in the top 20 at the very least. I'd now peg it probably in the top 50 for what it's worth. The Cook Political Report has it in likely Republican territory right now. I think Dunlap basically has the summer to prove he's viable. If he doesn't, there won't be a ton of national investment here by the Democrats. This actually happened on the other side to Dale Crafts, the Republican nominee back in 2020. He got some strong support in the early going. Then some polls came in. It didn't look like he was really moving the needle, and this fall was pretty quiet. Now, that was COVID, strange campaign, strange era. But I think it's a good model for how much rope Dunlap has to make this a race.
Yeah, and this is Kevin. I'll just add here that, you know, these national groups kind of make these decisions almost on the fly. So they can be fully invested in a campaign up until, you know, August, September, even into October. And if they see their poll numbers are not in their favor, they'll pull all their money and put it in other races where they think it's going to matter more. So it's something that can change almost in an instant, depending on how a candidate's doing.
So it seems, of course, we can't talk about this year's elections in Maine without talking about Graham Plattner and Senator Susan Collins. There have obviously been a lot of headlines this year about Plattner's past, but Mike, Plattner received more votes in the primary than any Democratic Senate candidate in Maine's history. What do you think that says about his chances in November against Collins?
Yeah, I wouldn't focus too much on the margin. It's a unique circumstance, right, with Janet Mills being in the race and then not really being in the race by the end. So I think what it tells us is something about the environment. Democrats had historic turnout with about 220,000 voters coming out. That was almost 100,000 more than Republicans. So part of that was the more interesting races on that side. So I think you can set aside a, you know, kind of a fraction of that. But these turnout gaps have been indicators of the election to come in the past. In 2010, Republicans turned out more than Democrats did. 2018, Democrats did kind of the same thing. Those gaps were much smaller than this one. So if I'm Collins, I'm much more worried about the environment than anything to do with Plattner himself. Can I get the Republican base out to save me? Maine's a Democratic-leaning state, and that side just seems much more riled up right now. So for me, that's the worrying factor if I'm the incumbent here.
And Kevin, anything to add on this?
Yeah, I think one thing where we might see a difference between now and, say, 2020 is this. It's clear that this is going to be just an all-out kind of dirty brawl between the parties at this point. We've already seen all the past dirt that's been dug up on Plattner. We're seeing the Democratic side really starting to go after Collins, and not just on some of these, you know, kind of traditional issues. Like we say, she's not doing enough to stand up to Trump. We're starting to see them dig into her. Plattner came out this week accusing her of corruption and working with her husband, who works for a lobbyist firm, to basically enrich themselves through her connections in D.C. So it's going to be a long campaign. Unprecedented amounts of money are going to be spent in Maine. I think it's going to see a lot of negative advertising. And I think, to Mike's point, exactly, I think Senator Collins' biggest challenge is, can she get enough Republicans to come out and support her in the fall, given that Democrats seem unified against her? She can't necessarily rely on the folks in the middle, the independents, to vote for her anymore because of this opposition to Trump and the Democrats linking her to the Trump agenda.
And that was Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller, along with Mike Shepard, the politics and investigative editor at the Bangor Daily News. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.